The water was glass calm and pitch black, reflecting the summer constellations and the lights of the houses along the coast. Green light illuminated the chart table down below, but Gavin Dawson didn't need to look at charts. Not once he'd passed the light at Race Rock. These were his home waters. His trip had been long. He'd been in Maine resting up from a long case involving old Seal Harbor money when he'd gotten the call. All the way down east in a hidden harbor ringed by pines, where his only clock had been the sun and the tides. The message had been left with his service. He'd returned the call, listened just long enough to know he wanted to take the case, told his new employer they'd decide on terms once he had the chance to assess the situation. Then he'd started the engine, hauled anchor, and headed south. The weather had been fair. He'd skirted the tail end of a storm moving out to sea. His boat, the Squire Toby, didn't mind one way or the other. She got the job done. She was as old as he was, 33 feet long and tough as hell. The rebuilt twin 350 Crusaders throbbed below decks, better than music. Entering Long Island Sound, he was coming home. He found himself thinking of old friends, old faces. He thought of Sheridan. His skin started prickling. He thought about turning back. But he'd given his word, signed on for a job, so he kept going. Past Mystic, Noank, and Groton, he heard the engine of a small plane, watched it fly overhead, and land at Groton New London Airport. He saw the big stone buildings at UConn's Avery Point campus, dark for the summer. He passed Ledge Light, the square brick lighthouse at the mouth of the Thames River, New London, Waterford. Once he saw the big ugly stack of Millstone Point, he knew he was practically there. Cruising past the power plant, he glanced over. Sheridan had always hated the place. She'd spent one summer protesting, a completely useless enterprise, just bobbing in her rowboat and holding up a big sign, "You are hurting the sound." She cared, he gave her that. The way she'd sit there all day, getting sunburned and thirsty. She wrote a song about it. Everyone else was out making money, having fun. He remembered water skiing by her one day, slaloming behind Tommy Mangan's Boston Whaler, jumping the wake to impress her and spray her while she sat in the hot sun, holding her sign. "Thanks for cooling me off," she'd yelled. "No problem," he'd called back. He put the memory behind him as he rounded the headland and crossed the mouth of Niantic Bay, past Black Point and Giant's Neck. Hugging the coast, he avoided the shoals he knew like the back of his hand. He and his friends had gone fishing here, either off the rocks with rod and reel, or spearfishing down below the surface. The ones with rich parents had scuba equipment and fancy fishing gear. The ones without rich parents just snorkeled or held their breath or fished with cheap poles. Either way, it didn't matter. They'd spent hours here, season after season. Ed Moriarty had pointed a spear gun at Gavin's head once, only once, and just as a joke. Even so, Gavin had broken his wrist. Anger, his old demon. He slowed down, staring at this stretch of coastline. This was the east side of Hubbard's Point, a rocky peninsula that jutted into Long Island Sound. The shingled cottages looked the same as ever. Their light shone on the water, crazy orange and yellow lines scoring the black surface. The tide was low. He could smell the seaweed and marshes. Taking the last turn around the point, he puttered between the big rock and the breakwater, skirting the raft 20 yards from the beach next to the rock. He maneuvered between two other boats moored by the breakwater, a sloop and a fiberglass speedboat. Then he dropped anchor and turned the engines off. His ears rang from the long hours of engine sounds. He walked to the stern, stared across the water. Facing northeast, he saw Little Beach, dark and deserted off to his left, then the thick woods, and then Hubbard's Point Beach, the long strand of sand reaching toward the rocky point. The longer he stood there, the more his hearing came back. He heard small waves slapping the hull, seagulls crying from their rookery on North Brother, kids laughing. He glanced at Little Beach, realized teenagers were still being teenagers. They were partying on the sand, behind the rock still painted with shark's jaws, graffiti that had been there nearly 30 years. The kids held his attention for a few seconds. Then he turned back to stare at Hubbard's Point. His gaze went to the point, the actual granite point that gave the beach its name. There were several houses built along its crest, some 30 feet up from the water. There were lights on in her house, one light upstairs, one downstairs. His hand closed around the binoculars, but he didn't raise them to his eyes. Not yet. He pulled a deck chair close to the rail and sat down. The boat moved on the tide, straining against the anchor line. He barely noticed. There was food down below, and ice, and scotch. He'd go get some, or all of it, eventually, but not now. First, he had a job to start. He watched.